Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Kanda Rozier is the president of Calabra Consulting. As a former CPO with extensive global procurement and operations experience, she combines a strong track record of business-oriented strategies with engaged team leadership, mentoring, and industry-wide advisory roles. Hi, Kanda. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Kelly. It's always great to talk with you, and I'm really excited to be on the podcast today.
So as I mentioned in that brief bio that I gave, you've been in a lot of different roles over the course of your career, but can you share a little bit more about what you're currently doing today?
So as you mentioned, I'm a former chief procurement officer at several global companies and also the head of global real estate at those companies. For about the last year and a half, I have been the president of Calabra Consulting. My practice area is focused on procurement transformation, really helping companies look at what they're doing with procurement and sourcing and look at where they want to go and figure out the best ways to get there.
Now, how did you end up with that specialization sort of in real estate within the procurement sphere?
Well, of course, I think a lot of procurement professionals would tell you that facilities in real estate are very frequently a category and often a very important category within the procurement scope. Probably roughly 20 years ago, while I was chief procurement officer, I was asked to take on the responsibility of facilities and real estate in addition to my procurement role. And I have to say I was a little reticent at first because other than dealing with facilities as a category, sure, it wasn't something I had experience with. And it was I would say I was sort of thrust into it or presented with it as a challenge and found out that the skills that you use for successful procurement and sourcing are very, very similar to the skills and the sort of the attributes that you need to be successful with corporate facilities and real estate. So it turned out to be, for me, a very good additional hat to wear. And as you look around, various industries, I'm increasingly seeing over the last probably 5 to 7 years that the heads of procurement are now also the head of real estate and facilities at a number of companies.
That is an interesting observation, and I'll actually share it. It's something that I've encountered in a number of these podcast conversations, that increasingly, instead of different parts of organizational work being put under the procurement umbrella, they're tacking on additional titles for procurement executives, which it is an interesting trend. And I certainly can imagine the transferability of the kinds of skills that you need to be successful in procurement allow you to deal with large scope projects that have a lot of detail and complexity that need to be managed. And so it's definitely an exciting thing to see that that's being recognized.
I completely agree with you. And I think that in addition to some of the project and program level skills that cross over between them, I think the approach to internal stakeholder partnerships and really looking at How do you create a trusted advisor role for yourself, whether you're wearing your real estate facilities hat or whether you're wearing your procurement hat, with your internal stakeholders is really a key thing.
Absolutely. And actually, speaking of that advisory hat, in addition to what you've already shared, one of the other interesting things about your experience is that you've served on the boards and advisory committees of many different kinds of organizations within procurement, which is a different vantage point, right, to look at our profession from. What type of a perspective have those experiences allowed you to form? What types of different ideas have serving in that capacity sparked in you as you sort of look at procurement, not 100% as a CPO, not 100% as a practitioner, but somebody that has that type of board or advisory level perspective?
Well, I definitely think that it has given me additional perspectives, and ones that often are sort of fresh in the sense that if you come at something only from the practitioner perspective, from the, we'll call it the customer perspective, even if you embrace, which I do very strongly, even if you embrace the notion of partnership with your suppliers, which I espoused completely, you still don't really ever have the opportunity to see things truly from their perspective. And so a lot of the advisory work that I'm doing with companies, solution providers and other, we'll call them supply side companies in our, in the procurement space, I think that I'm able to bring the practitioner view to them. And what they've given me is, I think, a different perspective and a level of empathy that I would not have otherwise had with the supplier perspective.
Interesting. And, you know, it's funny because I'm already kind of hearing this pattern, and I hadn't thought about it before you and I talking. Clearly, we're going to explore procurement from a number of different perspectives today, right? And yet all of those perspectives in this case come from your own eyes, your own ears, and your own experiences. And one of the other areas where you are very engaged is in terms of the ongoing discussion within procurement on social media. How do you find that being an active participant in those types of discussions both brings you new perspectives and also helps you evolve your own perspective?
Well, I think, Kelly, it's social media is the platform and the vehicle that we use now, and over the last year and a half that we've pretty much had to use to a large degree. But if I think back, you know, a decade or more ago, there were similar vehicles, and those were conferences. And they were organizations that you belong to. And so I think I've always embraced participation in my industry, because I'm a firm believer that I don't know what I don't know. And the only way I'm gonna learn is by continually exposing myself to new ideas, to new industries, to meeting new people. Because then I have the benefit of their knowledge, their experience, their successes, and also their stories of challenge, and you know, in a way, being able to learn from the collective successes and the collective failures of peers and colleagues.
And yet it's so hard, and I'm assuming that I'm not the only person that has this experience. You know, I try to be very good about pulling up my LinkedIn feed, pulling up my Twitter feed, right? Taking a look at some of these different options for platforms and engaging, staying on top of stories. And I'll think to myself, okay, you know, I have 10 or 15 minutes discretionary time now. let's see what type of content or what type of engagement I can do in that time. And I end up with 47 things that I want to do during the same 10 to 15 minutes because there is so much content and we can't possibly read it all. So I would love to get your tips or your point of view around how you make decisions. You know, when do you click? When do you read? When do you comment or share? What are your habits or process for going through that?
You're right. There's so much content out there. And I would say, you know, just if we just focus on LinkedIn, and that's, you know, I know Absolutely. That's a small subsegment. There's Twitter, and to even to some degree, there's TikTok and there's Clubhouse, and mm-hmm. gosh, there's lots of forums and platforms out there. But it could almost become a full-time job trying to stay, if you will, stay on top of LinkedIn. And I think that, you know, it's the same thing for if any of the listeners might be, big fans of Reddit. You know, you can think, I'm going to go look for a minute or two, and the next thing you know, it's an hour later and you've gone down 20 rabbit holes. And yes. you're not even sure where you started from. And I think the same kind of thing can happen on LinkedIn. I tend to approach, I skim a lot of things, like a lot of people, I think, yes. do. But to go from what do I scroll past to what do I read and what do I really engage with in terms of commenting or joining a discussion on, I kind of approach it in the same way that I would do some initial vetting, if you will, of a potential supplier or industry partner. I want to get a quick view. And some of these are those sort of, you know, the so-called initial, you know, your first impression of who's providing the content. What's their experience? What do I feel? And, you know, I use the word feel because it is very much a judgment call. What do I feel about their authenticity? Yeah. How does the style strike me? So for me, it's sort of that initial first impression. That's a combination of some very objective things, like mm-hmm. what is this content provider or this person's real experience, and is it relevant for me and for the clients that I'm working with? Is it relevant for my interests? And then there's also a subjective component that says, does their voice, does their tone, does their message resonate with me? So I think, like most people, you know, it's that sort of when you pick up a book and you're trying to decide whether to buy it. Yeah, I know I may have just dated myself. I like going to bookstores. I like picking up books.
Do you mean paper books?
Libraries. I like the touch and feel of yeah. of real books. You open them and you read the first page or two to decide, do you want to commit? It's not just do you buy it or do you check it out or do you subscribe for it, whatever it is. It's more importantly, do I want to commit the time? Do I want to commit my time to read this? And so I think it's that same sort of process that you use, that I use in terms of how do I consume content and how do I engage with it. So it's a combination of objective and subjective, and it is a little bit of a first impressions. And, you know, Kelly, that probably means I inadvertently miss some really good content. And it absolutely means that sometimes I get into, reading, engaging with some content and think, probably made a mistake on this one.
Well, and that's the reality, right? And I have to say, first of all, Kanda, you are definitely in good company. I'm one of those old school paper book types too. So No need to apologize. There's nothing like the smell of brand new paper as you flip through the pages of a book. I will never outgrow that, I hope. But I like this connection that you're making between the idea of vetting content and where you're going to spend your scarce time, and also either vetting suppliers for inclusion in a sourcing process, right? Or vetting suppliers to figure out who is truly a strategic partner and who just needs to be managed well as a more standard type of supplier relationship. And I think so many times, especially when I'm working with a professional or a company on content, I always take the time to remind them that not only is the title of an article incredibly important, so is the visual that you choose to go along with it. And obviously, I believe in the power and the importance of written content for sharing ideas, but I'm not so wrapped up in that that I miss the importance in today's content consuming tradition of grabbing people's attention with the visual. And that is sort of that first impression that we end up having with suppliers. But it's also a very soft skill, in my opinion. That's a very interpretive type of way to approach it. And so I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that you also believe in the importance of soft skills and soft skills development within procurement. Is that the case? And if you agree with me, what are some of the soft skills that you think are the most important?
So I absolutely agree with you. I think for me, on a personal career level, and as I look around, the lots and lots of colleagues and team members that I've had the pleasure and opportunity to work with over the years, soft skills are truly the differentiator for me. It is what makes the difference between, I think, good purchasing people, mm-hmm. and true strategic sourcing, strategic procurement professionals. For me, there's any number of soft skills, more sort of, it's the emotional intelligence factor. But I think that if I had to say, what are the key ones? And by no means are these the only ones. I think communication is absolutely critical. And communication is a broad, it's a broad topic, and it includes everything from active listening to being able to be both a good and an effective, and sometimes those are different, communicator, whether it's verbal or whether it's whether it's written, and that, by the way, is probably something that's changed over the last decade. The more and more that social media and sort of becomes a primary vehicle for how we communicate, I think I've seen people's ability to actually write and write well as effectively has changed, because we don't do it as much. Certainly in a business sense, we don't do it as much. On a personal level, we definitely don't do it as much. And yet there are times when you're, perhaps responding to a supplier or needing to put together a succinct overview description for a business case that you're assisting an internal stakeholder with, where you really do have to be able to write and have it not sound like you're sending a text message. So I think that communication is a broad topic, and yet you also have to know when can you drop the paragraph format and really deliver catchy, compelling, quick, informative types of communication. And I think also under that umbrella of communication is the ability to communicate all the way up and down and across whatever the corporate and the broader supplier network and ecosystem is that you're dealing with. And that means you have to be able to communicate as effectively with the C-suite as you are with staff in, say, a different country for whom English may be barely a second language. And so really having the ability to adjust your communication style depending on the audience and depending on the situation, I think is critical. The other big category of soft skill that I would say is really important is collaboration. And that means for me being able to, for a procurement person to be successful, to be able to collaborate with obviously your own team, with your internal stakeholders, and those can be both direct and indirect stakeholders. So it could be the business unit, the business division, say the head of marketing, who's needing to have a sourcing activity run. And it would also include the people perhaps in your InfoSec department and the people in your legal department and finance and all the various constituents internal to the company and that you have to deal with. So being able to create and build and foster collaboration with all of your internal constituents is critical, but you also have to be able to, I think, be successful at creating and fostering collaboration in a slightly different way with your suppliers. I have often believed, as I look at people that have been on my teams, that the team members who have been able to really embrace and develop their communication and collaboration skills are the ones that have had the most success, and in a lot of ways have therefore been able to create and deliver the most value to the organization. And by the way, that translates, you know, it's very much a loop. The more value you create, the more success you create for yourself and for the team as a whole.
Absolutely. And to this point of success, we've kind of outlined a very tall order. You know, I think it's probably one of the things that has made making progress in the area of soft skills so incredibly challenging for procurement, because it's not, okay, we're transitioning from technical skills to soft skills. It's no, add the soft skills and potentially category expertise and all kinds of new technology knowledge and spend strategies and relationship management approaches on top of the technical skills. And I think true to the name of the podcast, in order to do that effectively, we really are approaching the level of being heroic in order to do all of these things at the same time. So as I ask all of my guests, let me ask you, Kanda, what does the idea of being a sourcing hero mean to you?
For me, and I'm sorry, I was almost ready to respond with something that would have taken us completely off track about about the Greek notion of heroes and how heroes are often tragic. So we won't go that way.
Please, but, we only want happy hero stories here.
I think for me, you know, this concept, and I love by the way the sourcing hero idea. But for me, it is that it's someone who's very eclectic. It means that you've got a foundation of operational and tactical excellence and focus and attention to detail and ability to negotiate and run sourcing projects, deliver savings and quantifiable, measurable financial impact, you know, all of those sorts of things that for me are like the foundation layer. And then you've got to add to that, and you touched on it earlier, this idea of, you know, you really have to be able to have a lot of project management skills and even program management and ability to you know, keep some number, and it's more than two and probably less than 20, plates spinning in the air at one time. There's then you've got to start to add to that the soft skills, and whether it's the communication and the collaboration and the ability to build partnership. And at some level, and at some point in most people that I think would be considered sourcing heroes careers, they've also taken on leadership roles, and they have to start, they really have to have the ability to mentor and to coach and to lead, and to do that often in, I think, circumstances that might not be ideal. You know, as most people, I think, would tell you in procurement, we all have at least a couple stories where in our careers, procurement has been brought in far later than they should have into a project or into a sourcing exercise. And you really sort of, you know, already the rest of the race has started, and you realize you're having to do a whole lot of hard work to catch up before you can even start trying to be part of the strategic moves and, you know, be part of the Peloton, so to speak. The Tour de France is going on, so I had to throw in the Peloton reference there, but you got to catch up to the Peloton first.
Oh, and, absolutely.
And so I think that for me, a sourcing hero is somebody who really can, depending on the circumstance, depending on what the corporate and business imperatives are, what the cultural nuances are of the company you're with, of the industry you're in, you know, whether it's then also the current environment, you know, what's happened during the pandemic, what happened during, you know, downturns or other industry as well as world events. Being able to be agile and nimble is so, so important. And you package all that together. And for me, that's sort of the attributes of the sourcing hero. And there probably are some analogies, maybe for a later discussion, in terms of Greek heroes. But anyway.
Well, and let's actually explore that quickly, because I'm a sucker for a new idea. So let's go back to this idea of tragic heroism. Do heroes make mistakes?
Absolutely. You know, I'm an English major from, you know, in the dark ages long ago. And
you and so, me both, Kanda.
Of course, yeah. Heroes do fail, and sometimes they fail tragically. But for me, the relevance from a procurement standpoint, and it's, I guess, if I had a lesson that I would want to tell people and to tell leaders in particular, is it's don't be afraid to fail, because number one, you're going to. So let's just go ahead and accept and embrace the idea that if you haven't yet failed, you're going to. And you shouldn't be afraid to fail. It should be a source of learning, of adaptation, of really redirection sometimes. And that failure can be your own, say, in the way you approach a project or a negotiation. It could be also, and I think increasingly relevant for the sourcing hero, is you have to create and really engender an environment with your team where they know that failure is not fatal. And that's not to say that some failures can't be fatal. I you know, they could, but your team needs to know that failure can be that if you don't risk failure, you're probably not really risking the big success either.
That is an absolutely fantastic thought, Kanda, that it's, you know, with risk, hopefully comes reward, as long as we're all working together and qualifying our choices and pulling in the right direction. And as we start to wrap up this conversation, let me ask if someone listening in either wants to get in touch to discuss Greek mythology or would like to further the conversation about soft skills or procurement transformation, what is the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Certainly, I'm on LinkedIn, and I have the, a somewhat unique advantage of being the only Kanda Rozier. So if they look for me on LinkedIn, I'm the only one there, and I respond very quickly to requests and to messages, and they can on my LinkedIn, I have all my contact information, email and mobile, so they can certainly reach out. I love to connect to people who are as passionate about procurement as I am.
And I can vouch for the fact, Kanda, that you truly are one of a kind. And I would absolutely encourage people to reach out if you've enjoyed listening to this conversation. Kanda, thank you so much for joining me today on the Sourcing Hero podcast.
Well, thanks, Kelly. It's always great to talk with you, and it's been a real pleasure. So thanks again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well, and always remember that you can be a hero too.